Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Russ M., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Norristown, PA. Today is Friday, February 27th, 2026. And we are still in There's a Solution, and we're reading on page 21. We're in the second paragraph, and we're starting with the eighth sentence. It begins with, he has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment. And then we're reading 11 sentences and ending with, then he begins to appear in hospitals and sanitariums. All right. Our readers, we have Gloria B. for the steps, Ted's and P. for the traditions. Tony B. is going to start us off reading the text and sharing. 164, Tina S. will take care of that. Tamara C. is our backup reader. Our newcomer greeter is Hanietta R. And second hour host is Eileen M. Share IDs for yesterday, Thursday, February 26, 2026, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,242. That's 23,242. The 10 a.m. meeting, 23,244. 23,244. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I'll now ask Gloria B. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Russ. Good morning, OA family. It's Gloria B. in Missouri, recovered compulsive overeater. 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct demands to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And it's been a pleasure doing service for the month of February. Thank you.
Thanks, Gloria. Next up is Tenzin P. with the traditions.
Good morning, everyone. Tenzin P. checking in from New York, and here are our beautiful 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop compulsive eating. Four, Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards and committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much. Wishing everyone a blessed day.
Thanks, Tenzin. Thank you, Gloria, for your service. You guys are awesome. All right. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, or 11 sentences, and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the big book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today, we resume our study, and there is a solution. We're on page 21. And it's the second paragraph. Now follow me on this. The eighth sentence. He has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment. And then we're reading 11 sentences to the end of that paragraph, ending with, then he begins to appear at hospitals and sanitariums. And Tony B is going to start us off today.
Thanks, Ross. My name's Tony B. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. He has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be made or engagement kept. He is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor, but in that respect, he is incredibly dishonest and selfish. He often possesses special abilities, skills, and aptitudes, and has a promising career ahead of him. He uses his gifts to build up a bright outlook for his family and himself, and then pulls the structure down on his head by a senseless series of sprees. He is the fellow who goes to bed so intoxicated he ought to sleep the clock around. Yet, early next morning, he searches madly for the bottle he misplaced the night before. If he can afford it, he may have liquor concealed all over his house to be certain no one gets his entire supply away from him to throw down the waste pipe. As matters grow worse, he begins to use a combination of high-powered sedative and liquor to quiet his nerves so he can go to work. Then comes the day when he simply cannot make it and gets drunk all over again. Perhaps he goes to a doctor who gives him morphine or some sedative with which to taper off. Then he begins to appear at hospitals and sanitariums. Wow. That's quite a picture. And we're getting the picture here of the real alcoholic. And yes, so how do I relate in here? Well, I would say certainly the, you know, I would say that things were kind of always on the edge of kind of going somewhere. I did have certain aptitudes and skills. For me, it was singing, it was drama. I went to drama school and trained. There were things that I wanted to do, and yet this promising career never really got started. You know, my addictions just stole it from me. I was in a position where I had to eat, you know, and the way that affected me was just hiding, and my thoughts were just about that. That was all they could really be about. So after you know, after a day at college or whatever, when and even during the day at college, it was just all about the food that I could get, and just never really able to get on my feet, actually never able to grow up in the first place. So it just kept me stunted. So I relate to that, you know, there being some gifts, there being some positive kind of future, and then just this series of sprees. I couldn't ever get out of the merry-go-round of eating, and then trying to pull myself back together, and then eating again, and doing it when somebody was just about to come round to visit me. I'd be in a food stupor and not be able to greet them and be a friend. And so it's a, it, you know, I could say it didn't get kind of this bad in terms of sort of appearing at hospitals and sanitariums, but I wanted to go to hospital. I wanted to be looked after. I knew that there was something very, very wrong with me, and I was suicidal. And I would say, I've got to do something. I have to.
That's time.
Thank you, Russ. Thanks for letting me get started. And I look forward to hearing everyone's shares. I pass.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it. So we're going to open up the lines for sharing. And although we value experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day. So I need your first name, first initial of your last name, where you're calling from. And when you share, I got the time. Don't worry about it. I'll let you know when it's time. And let's go.
Tina S.
Tina S. Tina.
Janet B.
Hanayeta.
Elizabeth
H.
Janet.
Janet.
Elizabeth.
Shanna C.
There was someone right before Shanna.
Rivka R. Baltimore.
Loretta H.
Loretta, that's who it was. And now Rivka. Elena.
Nicole S.
All right, that is a list.
Chris B. R. Illinois.
All right, I think that's pretty good
Chris
right
R.
now. Excuse me, who was that?
Kelsey R.
All right, Kelsey, we're going to put you up on the next list. We got 10 for the first. Kelsey, you'll be the first in the second round, okay? All right, so we got Tina S, Hanayeta R, Janet B, Elizabeth D, Loretta H, Shanna C, Rivka R, I think it was Elena R, Nicole S, and Christy R. What a list. Go ahead, team.
Thanks so much, Russ, for your service. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. Wow, what a powerful paragraph. And you know, now I have I'm having a hard time finding out where we started. but you know, I could really, and thanks for the lead share. That was just wonderful. And you know, and a lot of my own experience, you know, it says that he is perfectly sensible and well and balanced concerning everything except liquor. But in that respect, he's incredibly dishonest and selfish, you know, and he possesses special abilities, skills, and aptitudes, and has a promising career ahead of him. He uses his gifts to build up a bright outlook in his family and himself, and then pulls the structure down on his head. You know, so my experience, and it seemed like to other people that as long as I was not drinking, I was functioning at a high level, and I was a very intelligent, common sense person, which was not the case. But, you know, when I wasn't drinking and, you know, early on, you know, I did well in academics and, you know, I was accepted to this hospital school of nursing. I was a top student of the class, you know, and then, you know, with my drinking, you know, who had time to do all this other stuff? You know, I certainly didn't. And I was young at the time and I hung out with people that were much older than I was, you know, and so, you know, they were already out of school, you know, and I was just going to school and it seemed like they were, you know, they already had careers and they were able to drink and do all this fun stuff. But, you know, a lot of them didn't drink. Looking back, a lot of them did not drink the way that I drank. But, you know, what I had to do, you know, something had to go, something had to give, and it certainly had to be school, you know. So I had to make up this lie that why I wasn't going to be there anymore. And, you know, and my family was devastated. I was the first person in my family to go to college, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, when I look back, it's heartbreaking. And for a long, long time, you know, I was shameful about all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, the good news about all that is, you know, that's who I was. It's not who I am. You know, I got sober, you know, and, you know, in my drinking in the school of nursing, you know, when I'd study, it was just like I was in a fog from all the food that I was eating. You know, I was able to, you know, we could get all this candy and stuff and, you know, put it on a tab, you know, and, you know, I would study and, but I'd fall asleep from all this food that I was eating, you know, and I ate because of all the insecurities within myself. But when I got sober and I got abstinent and it was no longer focused on the food, you know, I went back to school, I had a career, you know, I got to retire from that career, you know, stuff like that. So that is the transformation that comes about when I do this work, you know, when I don't stay in the throes of the disease and I, you know, and I get with some other people and I get with a God and I get connected and I work the steps and I become a different person. And all this stuff here, you know, is no longer part of my life. But as long as I was in the food and in the booze and this, you know, for me, as long as I was in the food and in the booze, this was my life, period. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tina. Appreciate you. Next up is Hanayeta R, followed by Janet B.
Good morning, Russ. Thank you so much for your service. I am Hanayeta R from Texas, and my name starts with a C-H. I want to comment on it says he is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everyday things. So, you know, I took care of the bills and I got my kids to school on time. And I, you know, I ran a house. I was definitely not a housekeeper, but the other things was pretty good. I would rather eat rather than clean up. And but what I really, what it said here is, perhaps he goes to doctors who give him, and I put in there diet pills, not morphine, and I took diet pills, and I drank, and I smoked cigarettes, and I ate compulsively 24/7, it seemed like, because I took so many diets. Back then, there was no, you couldn't tell that you just got a prescription filled somewhere else of the same thing. You know, there were no computers then that, you know, from one drugstore to the other. So I would go to 5 drugstores, 5 doctors, and get 5 30-day supplies of diet pills to be able to get through the day. And I had enough left over to sell in order to buy lots of food. So I had this business going that was pretty, so I could do lots of things. But I also have to say that I did end up in lots of hospitals. I was put in the hospital, I think, best of my recollection, about 5 times. One was for an eating disorder unit, but I was there 6 times, which was like the eating disorder from hell. And, excuse my French, but it was awful. And anyway, I don't think that I got very much better there, but I did learn that this is really an illness and that I have to have this program in order to survive, and I have to work the steps in order to survive, and that's what I did after that. I went back to meetings and I went back to the people that I knew were recovered, and I was with them.
That's time.
Thank you. So everybody has a miracle. Don't quit 5 minutes before your miracle. And welcome to the newcomers. Thank you, Russ.
Thanks, honey. Yeah, the next up is Janet B., followed by Elizabeth D.
Morning, Russ. Morning, everyone. This is Janet B., recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. So I'm looking at that first line, having a genius for getting tight, for binging at exactly the wrong moment. So I went to my first OA meeting when I was in high school. I was already like a full-blown compulsive eater. I was a train wreck. I couldn't stop binging. And I remember thinking, okay, I'm binging because I'm miserable. And one day, this college boy invited me to a Beach Boys concert. Well, when you're 17, there's like nothing better than that. And I remember I went out and binged and said to myself, ah, I must be binging to sabotage my happiness. And that wasn't true. I didn't binge because I was miserable. And then I didn't binge to sabotage my happiness. I binged because I couldn't not binge, because I had an illness that was stronger than I was. And when the illness says, you're going to eat, you'll be able to have just one and stop, I could not remember. There was a disconnect between my memory and my conscious mind where I made my decisions. And the bridge was broken there. I couldn't remember that I was always unable to just stop at one. I had no protection against that first compulsive fight. And again, it didn't matter if circumstances were good, if circumstances were bad. It didn't matter how I was raised. And in hindsight, I was raised really well. My parents weren't perfect, but they loved me. And I still binged. Again, because I had an illness where I couldn't remember that one bite always led to a binge. So what do I do, right, if I'm sunk? Well, thank God this chapter is called There Is a Solution. And they start telling us in a few pages that the solution is the grace of God, that God comes in and does a renovation job on my heart, on my life, on the way I think, on the way I start thinking about other people, on what's important to me. That happens automatically as a result of working these steps, right? Step 12 starts with a promise, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And in 4 pages, we're going to hear it in depth, right? The great fact is just this and nothing less. We've had deep and effective spiritual experiences that God has entered our hearts and lives and does for us what we could never do for ourselves. So then it got to the point, it doesn't matter. Life is sometimes good. Life is sometimes hard. Again, when I wasn't in recovery, the fact that, you know, a boy didn't like me was cause for binge. In recovery, I suffered through a miscarriage. I suffered through, you know, lots of hard things that we all go through, death of my parents, and I didn't binge because these steps promise us a solution where we are, like, protected and we never have to binge again. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Janet. Next up is Elizabeth D., followed by Loretta H.
Good morning. This is Elizabeth D. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, Russ, for your service. And thank you to everyone who has shared and has, to one extent or another, told my story. I heard this paragraph, this long paragraph read, and I thought, oh gosh, I really got to share on this. And if you're hearing the noise in the background, some people are working on my home, and I think I'm going to cut this short because I don't want to be distracted. I don't want to distract people, and I'd like to go to people who can share, but the main thing is that I'm hearing my story. Missing work because of binging the night before, taking sick days because of my binging, lack of doing work productively, and then getting laid off from jobs and being angry about being laid off from jobs and blaming my employer for that. The delusion, the lack of integrity, and all of this being a woman of, quote, faith and religion, I, as a compulsive overeater, if I'm practicing my disease, I am not able to live my morality. I'm unable because the food is in the way. Today I don't live like that. It's hard reading this paragraph because this is the way I used to live. And I'm just so profoundly grateful that I don't have to live this way anymore. Not only do I have a food plan and live in a healthy-sized body, and the size of my clothes never changes. That is the very least of the joys in my life today because of working these steps as laid out in the big book, entirely abstinent. That is the very least of the joys in my life. Having productive work today that I love and being honest in that work and being able to reach out to my colleagues when I'm having difficulty and being able to be honest about when I need help. None of that I could do when I was managing my image and binging my brains out. And with that, I will pass.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you. Before Loretta jumps up on here, let me let you know where we're at if you came on the meeting a little late. We're on page 21. There's a solution. Second paragraph, the eighth sentence of that paragraph. He has a positive genius for getting tight exactly at the wrong moment, ending with, then he begins to appear at hospitals and sanitariums. All right there, Loretta, you're up.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you all, along with my precious God. You are saving my life. Welcome to the newcomer. You're our primary purpose. And I am recovered in North Carolina. Praise God. So this paragraph, or the 11 sentences we read, I'm duly addicted. And in my other addiction, in my food addiction, I actually was hospitalized because I was attacked for running at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I got severely hurt, 2 car accidents because I blacked out. I'm also anorexic, and I have sugar problems with my blood sugar. And so the consequences of this disease, which is my primary disease, were much more strangling than my alcoholism. I was able to do that fairly comfortably, but this one took many years, and I didn't realize it even with my alcoholism because I just stopped drinking. I have gone to AA now. But with this disease, I did not realize, and I was in the program in 85, that it was the solution is because I have a spiritual malady. The solution is that the isms, invested in seeking more stuff. A lot of my disorders are behavioral. I do have the allergy towards, I love starving. I don't do it anymore, but it's very much, as other people have said, like a cocaine high. I've never done that, but anyway. So that was the solution for me. And until I was able to get that through working the steps, through that third step trust fund, finding somebody that's bigger than me and not me to actually help me, and my smaller power, which is you guys, to actually support me, I wasn't going to get over this. You know, I just wasn't, because it's a soul sickness. Because as I said, I'm always invested in seeking more stuff. And today I'm invested in listening to God and that third step trust fund, and that He is my employer. He is my CFO. He is the one that I must, but the only way I can have that spiritual awakening also is by working the steps. And today, because, and I don't live in them, I grow in them, especially being an anorexic. I didn't want to grow up or grow out. But today, because I work the steps, I've grown in them, because I do 10, 11s, and 12 on a daily basis. And with that, I pass. I am so grateful. And the shares were great, and I identify with all of them. But I have been in these 11 steps when I was, or 11 steps, 11 sentences.
Hi.
Thanks.
Thanks, Loretta. Appreciate you. Next up is Shanna C., followed by Rivka R.
Good morning. This is Shanna C., Grateful Recovered Compulsive Overeater from Tennessee. Russ, thank you for your service. And I identify with about everything that was shared this morning, and I couldn't be more grateful to be a part of this. And, you know, this is me. This page is me. I identify, you know, in my own way and from my own point of view. How I identify with the disease. And I'm so grateful that because of the 12 steps and because of strong sponsorship and being taught how to identify and really and to see what truly my alcoholic foods are and what my alcoholic behaviors are, you know, I can become properly armed with the facts about myself. Because with this right here, I don't know about anybody else, but I know that for me with alcoholism, I struggled with alcohol. I'm an alcoholic as well. And I mean, I could read this and identify as that. Well, yeah, alcohol is bad. Alcohol does this to me, you know, and it's easy because the consequences can be more severe with, you know, a night of drinking, you know, as we all know. But like, you know, so many have said in the insidiousness of the compulsive overeating, you know, that's almost it just really looked over in light of so many bad other bad consequences that can happen as a result of what is maybe considered worse things. And, you know, I'm guilty as charged with that. But if I actually substitute eating and food and or restricting or obsession with how I look or whatever, my God, the work potlucks. That's an example, like for me anyway, you know, a work luncheon, they're not going to bring in a whole buffet of alcohol to a work lunch and expect people to finish, you know, lunch and whatnot and be able to go back to work and function properly. But they'll bring in a potluck. And I remember days ahead of time fantasizing about that potluck that was going to happen and what I'm going to make and how I'm going to just only eat a little bit, because the last time I ate so much at the work potluck that you know, I'm too full. I can't lift my patience like I should. I just feel miserable, in a bad mood, dangerously antisocial. I don't want to be around anybody. I even skipped my high school reunion, 10-year high school reunion that I helped plan, because on the other side of it, I was too ashamed of how fat I was and how I looked, because, you know, I was the homecoming queen. The homecoming queen can't go back 10 years later fat. So this is the kind of way this disease just took a hold of me. And I really wasn't even that fat. That was the scariest thing about it, is my mind just, ugh. But thankfully, I don't have to live that way anymore. And that those potlucks, you know, I love the fact that I can bring my own damn food. I never thought I'd be that way. And I don't care if I look like a weirdo in some people's minds. I'm free today. And for that, I am eternally grateful. Thank God for this meeting. And thank God for the people who are bold enough
time.
To start this thing. Thank you, Russ. I love you. Love you all. That's all I got.
Thanks, Shannon. Appreciate it. Next up is Rivka R, followed by, I believe it's...
Good morning.
Elaine. Oh, yeah, I think. I don't know. I can't read my handwriting. Go ahead, Rivka.
Okay, sorry about that. I was unmuting. Rivka R, gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks, Russ, for your service and all the fabulous shares. So I can't say before recovery that I was perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except food. I was incredibly dishonest and selfish about a lot of things, but certainly in regards to food, like all the hiding and sneaking and, you know, I always wanted the best and the most for myself, and I certainly concealed food in the house so I could binge in secret. And I did have a positive genius for binging when some important engagement had to be kept, like burning my throat from all the food that wouldn't stay down in my stomach right before I was recording a CD I was singing on that I had spent a year preparing for, or spasming my stomach so badly I almost ended up in the hospital right before a dance performance, and a million other ways that I could just not show up for life. Like, there's no room for life when I was just obsessing about food all the time. And, you know, in addiction, my thinking is upside down. I mean, my world is upside down. So, you know, being on a diet, which normal people would just call normal eating, for me seemed like being in jail. And after a few days or hours of being in jail, I would break out, and then I couldn't put myself back in jail again. You know, freedom, I thought, was being out of this jail and just eating whatever I wanted. But, you know, I was thinking about how it says we will know a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, the old freedom and the old happiness, eating whatever and whenever I wanted, was when it, in reality, just a dark and crazy and chaotic hell of disconnection and distortion and illusion, where I made mountains out of molehills and lived in resentment and fear and shame and blame, and I couldn't see it. I just couldn't see it. You know, the new freedom and the new happiness means I can finally see the truth that there was no freedom and no happiness before, just the bondage to self. But real freedom and real happiness can only come from living a life of connection to reality. And reality is God. As one of my teachers says, there's no real life without God. And my new freedom, my new happiness comes from a willingness to give my life and my food over to the care of God. And now I, you know, this new freedom and new happiness is a life of connection and sanity and service and usefulness and abstinence and a life of gratitude, being able to value myself and others. You know, food used to give me the illusion of relief, and now being able to see right side up is the relief. I'm so grateful and grateful to be here with everyone. May we all be blessed on this journey. And I pass.
Thanks, Rivka. Next up, I believe it's Elaine. Just, I didn't get the first initial or last name. I can't decipher.
Hi, everyone. It's okay. It's totally okay. It's Elena R. I'm gratefully recovered here in New York. Longtime listener of this meeting, and I've never shared, but when I read this paragraph, there's something in me that just tells me I have to share and just be seen and not hide out. So there's many things in this book that I can identify with, but I'm the type of compulsive overeater that likes to identify out and compare myself to all of you and see how I'm not as bad, or maybe I'm worse in some areas. And the doctor's opinion was really powerful, but when I see a sentence that says he has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be made or engagement kept, I just think how grateful I am for my life. And it reminds me of when I, about 15 years ago, I moved to New York City, and I was on a quest to be someone, and I needed to prove myself to the world and prove myself to my parents and prove myself to everyone around me. And I got pretty high up in my company very early on, and they sent me out to go speak to a group of people. And I had this, it was about 300 people I had to speak in front of. I was nervous. I was silently suffering. And I remember going to CVS and picking up all of my binge foods before going to this event. And I had everything in my car, and I don't know what happened. I blacked out. I went to reach for my food, and I crashed. And I got in a car accident. And I remember as soon as I crashed, thinking to myself, thank God I crashed. Now I don't have to show up. And I'm laying in the hospital bed, and I'm thinking to myself, like, all I kept thinking was how grateful I got in the accident for. And, you know, and then it hit me, you know, there was only one other person that knew that I was doing this with food. And she said to me, you know, do you think you want to get some help? Like, you'd rather die, or you'd rather create a catastrophic event than show somebody, you know, your weakness, or show somebody that you need help. And the reality is I couldn't humble myself. I couldn't be authentic enough to speak truth and say, hey, I need help with this event. I don't know that I can handle it. Can I get prepared? Like, can you help me? But I would rather, you know, just get in this accident than show that I need some support. And I remember I started working these steps. And when I read this sentence, I mean, whatever, how small it is, how large it is for people, it kept me here, because it showed me, like, oh, this book gets me. This book understands the type of addict that I am. And every time I read this paragraph, I thank God for my life. And when I had to go back and make amends after I went through the steps, it was the most freeing experience for me that I had these tools. I could go restore integrity with these people and come clean in a way that was, you know, appropriate about, you know, what it was. And out of that experience, I had two or three people come up to me and let me know that, hey, I have an issue too. And so, I mean, when we pass along and we just be ourselves, like, there's, it's just miraculous how God works this program. So thank you so much. And I pass.
Thank you, Elena. Next up is Nicole S. by, I believe it's Christy R.
Good morning. Thank you, Russ, for your service. This is Nicole S. I'm recovered in Colorado. And I really relate to what this talks about, had a promising career ahead of him, and then, you know, pulls the structure down on his head. And I used to be a teacher, and I would have lots of times, my first teaching job, I had about an hour drive, and a Monday morning, you know, I'd be driving to work, and I would stop and binge on the way, and sometimes have to pull over and purge. And I would start my week out that way. And, you know, and just looking back up all the times too in the teacher's lounge and during my planning time. And, you know, I was just going to go have one of whatever was in there. And then pretty much my whole planning time was over for making trips back and forth to the teacher lounge to get more and more, and trying to hide it so nobody could see it. And, you know, think of that, what a better employee I could have been. And I did have that promising career. But I was so stuck in this disease that I couldn't be, you know, the employee. I couldn't be the wife or the mom or, you know, the friend, anybody, because of this disease. And then where it says it goes to bed so intoxicated, he had to sleep the clock around. And I did have some times. I remember one time in particular, I had binged and purged all day, and I had to work the next day, and I was driving to work and so sick I could hardly even function, and I had to call in sick at the last minute and really put them in a bind. And and I had to sleep all the clock around. And there was many other times where I was so physically sick that I should have stayed in bed, and I couldn't function. Anyway, I'm just really grateful, you know, that there is a solution. And, you know, the name of this chapter And it's giving so much right here about, you know, this is about the problem. And, you know, I simply couldn't make it and then had to eat all over again. But, you know, there is a solution. And I'm so grateful for that I didn't have to stay stuck in that illness forever. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Nicole. Next up, I believe, is Christy R. And then we're going to take a list. We might be able to take about two more with Kelsey.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. This is Chris, BR, B as in boy, R as in red. Thank you, Russ. Thank you, everyone, for your service on this call. I've been listening to A Vision for You for a while now. This is my first share. Really grateful to be here. Chris, compulsive overeater, recovering compulsive overeater, can really relate to the sentences that were read this morning and all the shares. And here's how, you know, my experience with compulsive eating shows up. That perfectly sensible, well-balanced concerning everything except for, you know, drinking or, in my experience, compulsive eating. In fact, I find, I can be really self-righteous at justifying all of my compulsive eating actions, especially whenever it comes to my career, be that, and I do reference my gods of achievement and gods of success. My day can be extremely stressful. And then, you know, I could have reached massive goals. I'm not going to tell you that I showed up and that I was spiritually healthy or recovered, that's for sure. But again, those behaviors were also justified because I was accomplishing so much, and I deserved whatever that behavior looked like on the end. And, you know, it could have been coming home for a binge, could have been binging at work, going out for a big lunch, then going right back to it. And, you know, that's how the disease shows up in my life, especially where work is concerned. I identified with that waking up and then needing it to start again. Of course, I'm waking up with remorse, right? But then I'm tired. I still have the stress. The work stress is still there. My home life stress is still there. I'm raising a kid, got a husband, you know, maybe have some animals that need to be taken care of, have family members, et cetera, et cetera. So, and I'm balancing all of it, right? I'm still upright. I'm still functioning. I'm still going to work. I'm still doing this. I'm still doing that. So what's going to give? And for me, it has been, you know, my food life. You know, those compulsive overeating behaviors. I've always considered myself high-level functioning alcoholic, if you will. You know, I can still do all of that stuff. But at the end, there's remorse. At the end, there's guilt. There's shame. At the end, there's a lot of weight. At the end, I'm not spiritually healthy. I'm so grateful for this program in showing me, guiding me, and teaching me in all sorts of different ways how that spiritual malady is affecting the rest of my life and how it affects people around me. And then how can I turn that around? How can I be helpful and useful? Because that same drive to be good at achievement and success, it's all driven because I have this great need to feel worthwhile and to be useful. However, if I'm showing up and I'm not kind, I'm not compassionate, I'm not caring, I don't have any tolerance, I certainly don't have any patience, it's not working for me. Thank you. Thank you. I'll pass. Appreciate the share.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. So in the sake of time, we have Kelsey at the top of this list because the first list is so long. I think we can take two more. We would like
Anita
to share.
Jay.
Mary Claire C.
Kimberly
Nancy
K.
Anita J. And I got Nancy.
Kimberly K.
So we got Kelsey, Anita, Nancy, and Kimberly, if we could add you in there. I don't know what the time's going to look like. So I had Kelsey R. from the last list, and Anita, Nancy, and Kimberly. All right, Kelsey, you're up.
Hey, everyone. This is Kelsey R., recovered compulsive overeater in Texas.
Thanks, Russ, for your service. I had every reason in the world, even the deepest false belief that if I were thin, I could be happy. In the rooms of OA, I would get into a recovered state and lose the weight and achieve that false belief that if I were thin, I could be happy. But I had so many other reasons, a successful career, a beautiful home, in a marriage with a good man, a mother to two miracles. But the problem is this was all my own frothy emotional appeal. And it pisses me off when others would throw frothy emotional appeal at me. But when I was the author of those thoughts, that was the real jumping off point for me. So what happens in program, because the reading says, it says, then comes the day when he simply cannot make it and gets drunk all over again. So he was sober and tried all of these things to not drink, but it says, then comes the day when he simply cannot make it and gets drunk all over again. All of the lowercase S solutions may work for a small moment, but they will never remove the problem like we're told can happen in this book, or that we can have permanent recovery. Anything human-powered will not solve my problem, will not remove the problem. And my own experience teaches me this, as have dozens, more than dozens of sponsors have taught me this, that nothing outside of a spiritual solution is going to solve my problem. Like, the solution has to be God. And I would repeat this relapse cycle, which is really just a self-sufficiency cycle. I would do the steps. I'd start to feel better. I would put down this life or death need for God because I felt better. And then I would slowly start slipping on all of the spiritual action, which keeps me connected, which is going to be what solves my problem. But the doctor's opinion makes it so clear that I will never be done. I have no bottom. My evidence is so, like, it paints a picture that every bottom is worse than the last. And so I think it's not going to be that bad, or I'll never do those things. And then I do those things, and it is that bad, and it's actually worse. So that's my true step one, is that I have no bottom. I will never be done. So I need help. I need power. And what it says is so beautiful. It says, on the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire, not fighting it, not putting it in under a lock and key, not having someone be my bodyguard. He is easily able to control his desire because he is given, I am given the power. If I follow a few simple rules, I just have to follow those rules. With that, I pass. Thanks.
All right, Kelsey, thank you. So we got 3 minutes. Could Anita take a minute and a half, and Nancy take a minute and a half, and Kimberly, I'm sorry.
Russ, I'll give up my time for Anita. Anita can take the 3 minutes. Thanks.
Okay. You guys are awesome.
It adds up. I don't think it added up like that, but thank you. You're all
okay, Anita.
Kid.
Go ahead, Anita.
Can you hear me?
Got you good, Anita.
Hi, it's Anita J. trying to be recovered in Massachusetts. So much everything falling down on people's heads, all of it, you know. But the thing that it just kept me thinking about how hard it was for me to finally turn to the solution that the book tells us, a power greater than ourselves. And I think about the diet pills. They didn't know at the time. They did not know that what a woman, pregnant woman, is taking into her body is crossing over into the child. And with my second child, I was gaining too much weight, and he prescribed pills again. But he knew from my past history that they had to be, they were called Black Beauties. And when my son was born, he was doing push-ups in his little bassinet. Everybody thought it was so cute, the little push-ups. He was going to be an athlete. And anyway, it wasn't until, I don't know, when he was in the teenage years or whatever, that they finally discovered. And I realized, well, I was addicting my own kids. Never mind drug addicts. You know, it's a lot of things happen. Some of them ignorance. Some, you know, the personality change when I ingest certain foods is a Jekyll and Hyde. I've always identified with that. That was yesterday's reading. But the solution, this book has it, and it tells you from the first page how 100 men and women recovered. So it's always been there. I've had that book for so many years. You know, the answers are on a bookshelf. And take it down, Anita. Take it down, study it, be a student. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Look at that. Perfect time, Anita. All right. Thank you, everybody who shared. And Nancy and Kimberly, if you could hang out for the next awesome meeting, the unrecorded meeting after the closing. I appreciate you bearing with me. All right. So the share ID for today, Friday, February 27, 2026, is 23,245. 23245. And now we're going to read from Big Book, page 164. Tina S. is going to read a vision for you. Our Big Book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then, and then we'll pray a serenity prayer.
Thanks, Russ. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.